Suppressors.
Suppressors. Welcome. Welcome. We're going to talk suppressors today. I got Danny here of Airlock Industries, and you're going to educate me on everything about a suppressor and why everyone needs one.
Which is different for you because it's not a muzzle brake.
Yeah, because I've been a guy that was more anti than for.
Yeah, we should probably start about caliber selection and then I move into suppressors. No, I'm kidding.
So explain to me again. So you talked to me, or let's go back first. How did this all come about? Because kind of taken, it seems like to me, I'm not a guy who's on the forums all the time, but every now and then I've Googled you and I hit rock slide forums and it's like 50 pages long. Maybe it's even more than that now.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of chatter out there.
Yeah.
About you.
Yeah.
And you're like brand new to this, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Started selling suppressors in August.
Not even a year.
Yeah.
And you're taking the hunting suppressor world by storm.
Yeah.
It seems like to me.
Yes. So like rolling back, I've always loved suppressors. I've had them for a while. I'd originally made my own Form 1 suppressors back before. So for those that don't know, Form 1 is you can make your own suppressor with the government. You can submit a permit and basically get your tax stamp ahead of time and then produce your own suppressor if you have the equipment to do so.
Uh-huh.
So I did that. And I wanted to make an ultra lightweight hunting suppressor that was, I felt like there was a lot of companies out there that were suppressor companies that made a product to sell to hunters, but they didn't make a hunting product, if that makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
they can be utilized for that, but they weren't going into that space with the intent of, we're going to make this product for these people. And being a backcountry hunter, I wanted something that was lightweight, small, and had adequate suppression. And then we were able to get more than adequate suppression.
Yeah. So it's always hunting first, right?
Yes. Yes.
You're a hunter yourself and you're just like, I just want something that works well for my hunts.
Yeah.
That was kind of the goal. Were you envisioning like it was going to be a business take off, or was that kind of the goal? Where at first I was like, I just want to see what I can build, use it myself, my friends or whatever, and then like see what happens there.
I had always wanted it to turn into a business. Yeah, I would say that was kind of the end goal. Didn't think that it was going to take off quite as fast as I thought. There would be a more linear ramp up than it has been recently. But yeah, no, I'm passionate about that. And just backcountry hunting. So I wanted something that was, I built the product for myself and then I hoped other people would like it. That was kind of the methodology behind that. It wasn't that I was going out saying, this is a product that I want to make to sell. I went out and made a product that I wanted to use and then also wanted to offer it to people. So, yeah.
It seems like there's some voodoo magic going on. Like for how light they are and how quiet it is. So I only have one other suppressor.
Yeah.
And it's way heavier and it's not as quiet.
Yeah.
Like you can noticeably hear it.
Yeah.
With just my ears. I'm sure if I put like a decibel meter next to it, you could prove it to me right now, or you probably know what the differences are. But it's like, it seems crazy that you can have something that small and that quiet.
There is some patented tech on the inside that makes it that way. Yeah. Yeah. Which it's patent pending, so I'm not going to go into super great detail with it, but the idea with the suppressor is you're trying to cause turbulence. They're trying to capture the gas as it comes out of the end of the muzzle. More turbulence you can cause during that process, the slower you can get the gas to go, the quieter the sound is going to be. Most people need more length to do that with a suppressor. That one doesn't. You can it does it much more efficiently in a much shorter space with a much smaller volume, just because it's much more effective at causing turbulence.
Seems wild to me. Like, how long have you been working on these?
Since March. Yeah, March is when we officially had our FFL. I had Form 1s before that, but like when we actually started digging into it hard was in March. Yeah.
Seems so quick. Like, did you like hit gold right away, like the first design, or is this like multiple iterations for a little bit to like kind of fine tune it?
I had one, I think, so we started with machined cans initially, just playing around with lightweight cans to see kind of, you know, something that was kind of like a Thunder Beast Ultra 5.
Yep.
I didn't like the performance of that. And so we found a company that does 3D printing that started getting me some prototypes. So I was sending them drawings, getting a prototype out, shooting it. Mm-hmm. And it was fairly quick. I think it was prototype 4 or 5 that there was something that I changed on the suppressor to see if it would do what I thought it would. And it just instantly had a 20% performance increase from my previous ones. So then we just continued to run with that design. So then it was kind of taking that key component and then perfecting that from there instead of starting from ground zero. Kind of the same thing with the design as far as weight. There's two ways to engineer something. You can either start with something that's, you can overbuild something and try to figure out where to cut weight, or you can build something light that's purposely underbuilt and test it to see where the failure points are and add material where needed. I did that. And so the weight came down to doing, like the first prototype was 4.5 ounces or something. It was stupid light. And then we just continued to add material where we needed to make it to where it was at a safe place. But we were doing sound testing and weight kind of at the same time. I was also kind of on a shoestring budget, so I was trying to be as efficient with every prototype that I possibly could. Yeah.
So what's your background before this?
Engineering. My parents have a, I don't have an engineering degree, but my parents have a manufacturing company and we make industrial equipment. So I've always, I've been on SolidWorks since I was 10 or something like that. And we had a, it's like Legos for big kids, SolidWorks is. So I liked CAD. So I've always been kind of doing that to a certain degree. Yeah.
I gotta say too, the correction every time I look at the logo is just perfection.
I'm glad you like it.
Like it's like the coolest logo out there.
Yeah.
Like how did it even like think about the company name, the logo, like that whole thing? Cause like, I think it's really catchy too. Like you see it and you're like, you kind of take a second guess, like, wait, is that what I think it is? A logo? And then it just, I don't know. It just seems like everything is well thought out and like to a T, like dialed, like a good logo, good company name.
Yeah.
Product looks good and it looks different than other things. And it's just like, I don't know.
Well, thank you.
I'm not just BSing here.
Yeah.
It's like, it, instantly I was like, that's a cool logo.
Yeah.
It's like, you're setting yourself up or setting yourself differently than everything else that's out there because like it's eye catching. So instead I'm going to stop and look at it. We'll see it's something on the internet about suppressors. I'm just going to keep scrolling because nothing looks eye catching or good. Mm-hmm. Your logos or company names. And it's like, this one's like, what is that?
Yeah. The name came up. It's really hard to have an original name in the suppressor industry because especially now, names for anything like products, names for suppressors, just any company name is hard to come up with. So I was trying to figure out something that I like names that are in line with whatever the product is. I mean, some companies will just make a name because it sounds good. Like Rolex, they made that name purely because of it sounded premium. There's no meaning behind the name Rolex. Go Hunt. It has to do with what they want you to go hunt. I was basically trying to figure out different names. And what I came up with was, I was coming up with like chambers was kind of what I was playing with. And an airlock on a submarine or on a spaceship equalizes pressures between two spaces. So astronaut goes out, one door closes, one door opens. It equalizes that pressure so they can go out.
A little airlock. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where the name came from. Because an airlock, if you think about it, on a suppressor, you're trying to regulate the gas that's coming out of the barrel, and you're trying to regulate that pressure between two spaces, and that's kind of what it does to a certain degree, without obviously like seals and stuff like that. But that's where the idea came from, and I just like space.
I'd be an astronaut before you're saying.
I've never wanted to be. Everybody wants to be an astronaut when they're a kid, but it's never something that was ever like in the background. But then when I came up with the name Airlock, so started with the name, and then after that, I was like, okay, it needs to be a logo that's very recognizable, and also it just needs to look cool. that's part of a logo is it needs to have some sort of appeal to it. And so I instantly went into the space because of the name with Airlock and then that kind of aspect. That's the direction I went with that.
Can you imagine how big of a mule deer there are probably on some planet out there that we don't know about right now?
Oh, I can't wait for the artwork that I'm having done. There's going to be a lot of like t-shirts and stuff like that. Yeah, we had a design firm in Portland called Lincoln Design. I don't know if you know. They do a bunch of stuff for like Black Rifle Coffee and stuff. And I
saw you post about that the other day.
Yeah, so I reached out to them and now we have some suppressors sold. I was like, I'd like to have some cool swag for people. So while they're waiting for their suppressors, they can buy like a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I got on a phone call with them kind of like bouncing around different ideas of some stuff that's coming out. And a lot of it is hunting, but on planets and stuff like that. And I'm really excited about some cool shirts that are going to be coming out in the near future.
Best friends.
Yeah.
Geek out on that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Anything to do with space or crazy stuff like that. Yeah. Sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah. Sci-fi, but fun. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when I talked to you a while ago, you were explaining to me 3D printed titanium.
Mm-hmm.
How does that even work? It sounds, every time I've explained it to people, like we were talking about this weekend, and then when I was up on the mountain goat hunt with Dale, I was like, I don't even know how this works.
Yeah.
Even the just the thought of 3D printed, then you have the word titanium afterwards. Like, how does this process?
Yeah.
To like make that what it is, 3D printed titanium.
So I think a lot of people, when they think of 3D printing, they think of your traditional polymer based 3D printers where you have a head that melts material and does that. And people think, how can you get titanium to like 3000 degrees and like melt it? Like,
guess what I'm thinking is happening.
Yeah. So what it does, it puts down, in the case of this, we print at 60 microns, which is about 2 thou of material. So super thin, but it lays a, it's a print deck. So you have a piece of titanium that's a plate and it lays a super thin layer of titanium. And then there's a laser that actually melts the suppressor in place. And then it does another 2 thou layer of titanium, prints it, and it just builds those pieces up. And effectively, you're welding powder top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And then once you're done, you have the actual build plate will raise up out of the, it's actually kind of Star Wars, it actually comes up out of the middle.
You're talking about awesome stuff.
Yeah, it comes up out of the middle, and then the powder falls apart. And then you go in there and you vacuum out the powder, and you basically have these 3D printed structures that are just welded to the plate. And then from there, you go and take it to either a bandsaw or wire EDM, and you cut it off, and then you have your suppressor. But it's actually using lasers to, also the space theme, the lasers to actually melt all the titanium powder into the design that you want.
So this enables you to do something that before was you could not do in a suppressor, right? Because of like how things are machined with like different axes on stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like you can do, options are kind of endless, right?
Yes.
You're programming something and
yeah, if you can draw it, basically you do have some. So like when you have when you're printing, you do need to have certain geometries in place. You can't go below a certain angle, just with how the powder is, how you're melting the powder, because you need to have structures. Same thing kind of in the back, like where the direct thread mount comes up. You can't go up and then go back down, and you can't print the direct thread mount. So you need some supports in there to basically kind of build off of, but it gives you extreme flexibility with complex geometry. So you're allowed, and you can do like in the case of like that ribbing on the inside of the suppressor, so you can do a little bit thinner wall but also have ribbing to actually help with the structure of the suppressor, so you're increasing strength but still reducing weight. So it gives you some flexibility like that. Or even the blast baffle, you can put ribs on the blast baffle to use a slightly thinner material but then also have the structural reinforcement you need to have an adequate blast baffle. So, yeah, the problem is with 3D printing, and I will admit this, is that you have such flexibility. If you have a mind like mine that's constantly thinking of new ways,
can you do differently? Okay.
Yeah, and I'll put too many designs in one, so I'll make a suppressor, and it'll be 2 dB quieter than the last one. But I will have changed 6 things on it, and been like, okay, I need to reel this back. Let's go print a couple other ones and see what was the one change I did on this that's going to transpose into other designs. Because yeah, you have like, or it's louder, and you're like, okay, what was the one thing I changed? So like for me, I have to, if I have 6 changes, I have to print 6 different suppressors with those 6 different changes just to see what the actual. What the actual improvement was between those. Yeah.
You're telling me you're pretty good at taking notes. Like, are you pretty dialed of like, okay, here's the changes I made. Here's what worked. Here's what didn't work. And like how you're iterating it throughout the whole process. Like, cause I think of like when I go out in the field, like reloading or whatever, I'm just like super detailed. Mm-hmm. So the next time I can copy that exact same recipe. It seems like with this, like you're saying, like you're trying to improve constantly by like documenting the whole thing. Like that slight little change, I bet in the suppressor could like, be a positive or it can be a negative depending on how you're doing things. Like you'd have to be pretty dialed at this.
Yeah, I'm not really good at note taking, but I'm good at keeping all my drawings. So I'll have like a I'm never changing a drawing and deleting the old one. I have V1, V2, V3, all the way up to V20. So I'll just have versions of that and make incremental changes on each one, and that's kind of how I keep track of all of that when it comes to the actual design.
Walk me through some of these what seems to me like you're just burning the suckers down.
Yeah,
so many rounds down.
Yeah, I actually watched one of your YouTube videos on how to break in a barrel, and that's where I came up with that. No, the you need to have durability testing done in any product. Yeah. Just, I mean, you guys do it with clothing and stuff like that to see if it's, when it's in the field, where's the stress points, where is it going to be. For me, the burn downs that we do is typically I do whatever the shortest barrel length restriction that I think the rifle's going to be rated for, the suppressor's going to be rated for.
I was going to talk about that one later, but you're on it right now. How do you determine, like, because I know some websites says like barrel length.
Mm-hmm.
So is it a minimum barrel length restriction or is it a
minimum? Minimum. Yeah. Yeah. You have more pressure the shorter the barrel.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So a 16-inch barrel on a 300 rum is going to create way more pressure than a 24-inch 300 rum. Yeah. You technically have higher velocity of the gas exiting, but the pressure itself has dissipated in the length of the barrel versus, you're using the barrel as the pressure chamber versus just the suppressor at the end of it. Yeah.
Gotcha. So that's why you put I think there's some caution stuff on your website about under certain barrel restriction or barrel length, you don't want to be below that then.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of that's for pressures I'm not as worried about. Most of it has to do with ARs. So short barrel ARs generate a massive amount of heat because you have unburnt powder going into your blast baffle and you get powder checking. So you get gas and powder to where the gas is actually hitting the blast baffle so fast and so hard with unburnt powder, you're basically sandblasting the titanium and you just don't get good wear properties out of that. That's why most AR suppressors that are Inconel and stuff like that, because you're generating a lot of heat. That's designed for hunting and that's what it's intended for. So the minimum barrel length restrictions is mostly have to do with that. That being said, when we've done the burn downs, that 6.5 there, I still have one, the burn down that I use personally, and I put 100 rounds on a 16-inch 6.5 PRC as fast as I could through it, and I still use it. There's no problem with that suppressor after doing that burn down.
You're doing that for just longevity test, durability test, see what happens when you're doing it. You're just trying to...
Yeah, I'm trying to...
Trying to simulate the most crazy environment, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, generate as much... without going overboard. You put it on a short barrel AR, you can melt one because you can get it to 2000 degrees, but I'm trying to generate a massive amount of pressure and heat in a excessive situation. Not that you would ever do that, but because the throat of that barrel, like the 22 Creed that I have, I don't even want to know what the throat of that barrel looks like, but I think there's not much rifling for the first quite a bit in that barrel. But I'm just trying to generate as much heat and pressure. So I know, okay, this is a safe metric. If I can do 100 rounds on a 6.5 PRC as fast as I can to where the it's almost glowing and there's no damage to the suppressor, then that's a safe metric to be at with a 16-inch barrel. So that way I can have a safety factor there. That being said, there is one thing with titanium. Once you heat it above 800 degrees, the property of the material is permanently compromised. So a lot of people don't know that. If you do an AR dump on it and turn it blue because you get it to where it glows red, a lot of people are it held up to that. Well, it did hold up to that, but the material properties, you've now made the titanium brittle, and the titanium doesn't have the strength that it had before, which is kind of something that people don't. It's kind of getting a puncture in your tire. You can patch it, but the integrity of the tire is not what it was with a brand new tire. Yeah.
Do we also recommend how many shots per minute on your about these suppressors too?
That's mostly because people don't know how hot 800 degrees is. So I just put a 15 round per minute restriction on there just because telling people keep it below 800 degrees. Most people have no concept of what that is, and it's easier for a consumer to just see that and know. Also, in a hunting rifle, like a carbon barrel, you don't want to put 15 rounds on a rifle in a minute. That's not good for your rifle.
I don't think I've done that in my entire life, no matter what rifle it is, a hunting-based rifle.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. It's sometimes I go to the range and I shoot five rounds. I'm like, oh, that was a good day.
Yeah.
And it was I accomplished everything I need to accomplish, and the rifle shot phenomenal. Why would I shoot more? And that probably took me 2 hours to shoot.
Yeah.
5 to 15 rounds.
Yeah.
I baby my guns.
Yeah.
I don't burn them down.
Yeah, I know.
But it was funny though when you tagged me in the breaking your barrel, and I legit got DMs back. It was like, this is really what you do? Internal joke here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am the opposite. I put a barrel cooler on after every single shot.
Yeah.
It's hot in the desert, and I would try to simulate a cold war, hunting rifle shot. So I like to cool it down every single time.
Yeah.
But it's crazy that you can put anything on the internet and someone will you actually do that? You have to question.
Yeah, question everything. Yeah, it's funny when I did the nano burn down. So I did the same thing, 16-inch 22 Creedmoor, which is a very high pressure round. A lot of people don't know too. The smaller the bore you have on a rifle, and the larger the powder charge, the more uncorking pressure you have. Mm-hmm. So when you're squeezing that much pressure through a tiny bore, a 300 rum generates a lot of gas pressure, but it doesn't generate a lot of uncorking pressure because you have a 30 cal bore. You go to a 22 Creed and you have a fairly decent sized cartridge with a tiny little hole. When it comes out, just the velocity of the gas is higher, which is different. And when I did the burn down on the Nano, which is our little 3.7 ounce suppressor that's only 4 inches long, 4.5 inches long, I picked up all the brass and had a friend, Dione, reload it for me for another burn down. And he texted me and he goes, do you know that the brass on this, on the last like 10 cartridges you fired were blue? And I was like, I wasn't paying attention. I was just feeding it as fast, hot in the lot, as you said. And he goes, that means the chamber on that 22 Creedmoor was over 400 degrees. Yeah. So it's abuse, but it's just a safety standard that we want
to
have.
So safe to say you're not pressing the trigger and doing that. You're just slamming the trigger and just pulling that bolt as quick as you can.
Yeah.
As many rounds as possible.
Yeah. No, I'm banging that trigger. Yeah.
Are you, you're not hunting with those rifles, are you?
No. I have burner rifles that don't have scopes that are just used for this purpose. And then I have my nice hunting rifles that are separate from that. Yeah.
So is there differences in, maybe we should explain your suppressor line up first, like which the calibers offered. But is there differences then in like 6.5 compared to 7 compared to what you're coming up with a 30 cal, like internals work?
Yeah, there are a little bit. They're incremental. So they're improvements that we've kind of figured out along the way. Like the Nano, we've figured out that we don't need the volume that most suppressors need for suppression, even on a 22 Creed. And so I try to tailor the size of the suppressor based on the powder charge that I think it's going to need to handle. So in the case of the 30 cal, I'm purposely going up in not diameter, but overall length on that. It's still only 6 inches long. It's still a fairly small suppressor.
Super small.
But I'm going up because of 300 RUMs and 300 NORMAs, and those larger powder charges, you do need some volume to be able to effectively slow the gases on something that big. Whereas with the Nano, 22 Creed is what it's rated up to. It's not the absolute quietest on a 22 Creed, but for its size, for a hunting situation, it's very quiet for what it is. Same thing with the 6.5. I was thinking, okay, 6.5 PRC is a pretty... I mean, you've shot them with breaks. They're pretty cracky little rifles. I mean, like a 6.5 PRC versus a Creedmoor, they have a different, like they crack. So that size was kind of tailored around a PRC. It works awesome on a Creedmoor, but also I wanted just the volume of that to be able to do adequate suppression on a 6.5 PRC. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the mount coat didn't even know what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the cool thing about suppressors and why I love them for hunting is, well, in the case of like you and Dale, like being able to double up in that situation and like see the animal's reaction. I shot my deer it was 2 years ago with my suppressor, and that was one of my form ones. And it was a November hunt, 2 rutting bucks, 1 doe, shot the buck that I wanted, walked up to it, and the other buck and doe were 100 yards away just staring back at me, and they didn't even really know that I had killed the other deer. They were just confused. Yeah.
Dale had taken 3 shots, and my billy was still bedded. I think finally the commotion of like the billy moving around was probably more of the reason than a crack of a rifle through a suppressor, but like my billy just sat there and was bedded, and then, yeah. Worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
The situation. And it kept my rifle light.
Yeah.
It's really nice because I wanted to keep a lighter weight setup for that hunt. And it just makes it so quiet. It is pretty remarkable. I have muzzle brakes that are way heavier than a suppressor. Like, no joke. Yeah.
Steel muzzle brakes.
Way heavier than a whole suppressor setup.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're loud as heck compared to a suppressor. But
they serve a different purpose for taming a 300 RUM. Yeah. Yeah.
What are some of the decibel levels you're getting out of these? And like, how, like I see your tests all the time, and you obviously have a decibel meter. Is it right by the shooter's ear that you're trying to measure?
Yeah, I mostly measure shooter's ear. I measure muzzle sometimes, but mostly shooter's ear, because for a hunter, that's kind of the more applicable number that I think.
Is that what people always are looking at when they're like talking about suppressors on the internet? Again, like I don't research a lot about suppressors, but it's always decibel at shooter's ear. Is that becoming more standard than trying to do it somewhere else? Or
It depends on the platform. AR suppressors are typically taken at the muzzle. That's for 2 reasons. You have port pop on an AR, so actually by the port of the actual, like, your shooter's ear, typically regardless of how quiet your suppressor is, your gun's going to be 140 decibels because you have the gas coming back out of the gas. So a lot of ARs will rate them. They do typically ear and, like, Pew Science will do ear and muzzle, but a lot of it has to do with the muzzle. They'll do a mil spec, which is 1.3 meters high, 1 meter to the left, in line with the muzzle, and that's where they'll set up their sound testing. Most of my stuff is done at the shooter's ear just because, again, it's a hunting suppressor, and that's kind of more in line with the and it seems like the manufacturers that do more hunting style suppressors are definitely, they'll quote more of a an ear rating for suppressors in that particular vein. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is the decibels you're getting on some of these, like your the 6.5, 7 PRC, and like, what do you, I guess it all depends on what the rifle you're shooting, but like, was pretty much an average of like your can?
It's barrel length and cartridge dependent. And again, we have a Larson Davis 821, which is it's a nice sound meter. It's a $5,600 sound meter, but it's not a pulse system. So,
$5,600?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But it's not a pulse system, which is like 60 grand. So like
I think someone needs to,
yeah. Yeah. If anybody out there has one, wants to donate one, I would love one. So it's accurate for kind of getting a range, but I wouldn't say they're the most accurate. Even at $5,600, they just don't have the depth of recording that you have with a pulse system that's actually picking up the actual pulse of the rifle. And so I'm putting that as a caveat because we are going to go to Thunderbeast does a summit every year where they actually have a pulse system and they will invite every suppressor manufacturer to come and use their system for 1 week of the year. And everybody gets to test side by side, which is very cool of them because it's what they kind of call a transparency summit. Like you come, we all test on the same days, the same rifles, the same ammo. That way the numbers they post are actually like actual data versus the other thing with decibels is that you can have decibels change 1 to 3 decibels just day to day. So like a crisp cold morning, it's going to be quieter than a hot summer day. And that just has to do with the atmospherics. That being said, the 6.5 in our testing has typically been 127 to 128 at the shooter's ear, which is in line with most 7-inch cans. It's quieter than most. It's quieter than everything its size that I'm aware of. But as far as like most 7-inch cans, that's what it's more in line with.
Mm.
That's pretty wild. Wow.
Yeah.
Voodoo magic again.
Yeah.
What it is.
Yeah.
You're just taking things from space and tossing it down here. And we don't even know if you're a real human right now.
Yeah. 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 We tried to use space technology, but it wasn't advanced enough. So we had to go back to the drawing board. No, it works extremely well for its size, which is kind of a catch 22 because you put out a number out there and everybody on the internet's like, it can't be real. Like that's that.
So I don't creep on forums very often, but I was like, people are just like, has anyone cut this in half yet down the middle and see what's going on? Like, how can this be possible? There's no way. And yeah, that's why I like the videos you put because it just proves it.
Yeah. And I always try, again, because decibels can change day to day, that's why I like to use another manufacturer suppressor as a side-by-side comparison. So I'm not just shooting a rifle saying, okay, it did this on this day. Like that can be, you can tweak the numbers there and make it sound better than it is. But if you shoot it next to a 6-inch can and you shoot the zero gravity next to it on the same rifle at the same time with the same meter and it's 4 decibels quieter, that gives you not necessarily what I would say a rock solid decibel number, but it gives you a metric of measurement against some other competing products, at least then, because like on a hot day, both of them are going to be 4 decibels louder. So that's kind of where we come up with that. Yeah.
Hmm. How are you deciding what calibers to come out with? Is it feedback from users on like most popular things that they have, or are you just like new, this is what I want to do first, and eventually we're going to perfect this and then work to other things?
Yeah, the 6.5 was because I like 6.5s, and so that was kind of like a personal thing. I'm like, this is the suppressor I want. I like 6.5 PRC, I like 6.5 Creedmoor. Like, that's the suppressor that I want to make. And then after that, 7 because I have a 7 PRC, and I like that. So that was kind of, it seems like it's stuff that I like.
I do like that side of it. Though.
Yeah.
It means you're really passionate about certain things. Yeah, you can do whatever you want. It's your company.
Yeah. And like with the Nano, that's our 224 caliber one. So it's not a 22 rimfire. It's a centerfire suppressor. That one was kind of went into the vein of with that was I don't necessarily want to make a rimfire can because there's a lot of companies that do very good rimfire cans. And I don't want to make a product that's just a product to sell. I want to make something that's an improvement out there. And so I thought, okay, if I size it up a little bit, let's make a really good like training can. Let's put it on a 223 bolt gun where a lot of guys use for training because they can put a lot of rounds on it very effectively, helps them call wind. So I'm going to go up in size a little bit for our 223. And then we start testing it and it was quiet on a 223. So then I had Dione again out and I was like, hey, can you bring your 22 Creed and can we throw it on there and like see what it does? And it was like, it's not the quietest can on a 22 Creed, but we're talking on a 16-inch barrel, it's 132 decibels, which is pretty quiet. On a 20-inch barrel and 22-inch barrel, it's 130, 129, which is very quiet for how tiny it is. It's 3.7 ounces. So that was kind of that one we kind of fell into because I was trying to make it more for 223 training guns. And then I realized that the volume of that suppressor and the tech that was in it was able to suppress a 22 Creed. So that kind of opened that up. And then the 30 cal is just because I get... 10 emails a day from people asking when we're coming out with 30. So that's where I've been focusing on that recently.
When are you going to come out with the 338?
Yeah. A lot of people have been asking that too, but yeah, people ask about 338, and it's actually not even, it's not even the Lapua guys. It's actually the guys that are on the East Coast. I want to use 338 Federals and stuff like that. The guys that hunt hogs and stuff, they want that. Okay. And maybe we'll go into that, but like right now I'm trying to make products that I don't want to make a product to sell. I want to make a product I'm passionate about. And the 30, I like 30s, like 300 blackout. I like 30 and 300 Win Mag, 300 PRC, 300 rum. Like those are cool. Yeah. And so the 30, like we just got our first few prototypes. We've had some prototypes. I wasn't happy with them. They were okay, but they weren't an improvement what was out there. Mm-hmm. And then these new ones we got are wild. So I'm very excited about that. So we do a lot more testing on them, but just the initial numbers we were collecting on them and doing side by sides with other suppressors were, impressive.
Yeah. What were the numbers you sent me yesterday in that video? You shooting the 300 rum?
It was sub 130 on a 24 inch 300 rum. On a 6-inch can, which is wild. Again, I'm not putting that out there for so people know. Not putting that out there is like, this is a gospel number. We need to do more testing. But the fact that I took ears off after the first three shots and went, okay, that didn't sound very loud with, because I, when you test suppressors, you want to have hearing protection on to protect your hearing, just because of longevity, because I do so many rounds on it. But I did those and I went, that wasn't that loud. And I took it off and shot another round without it. And it's funny because it wasn't my 300 rum. It was my friend's 300 rum. And he's behind me and he's like, I have never heard a rifle sound like that with a cartridge like that. So, he's pretty excited.
What would be, it can be 6.5 too, but what would be an unbraked decibel compared? Like if you took your suppressor off and had the unbraked 300 rum, like what would that be decibel wise?
I have a 20 inch 300 Win Mag, which is loud. The 20 inch 300 Win Mag is very loud. I just did 1 metered sound on it. It was 158, I think, at the shooter's ear. Mm-hmm. And then with the suppressor on, it was 129. Okay. What people don't know though is decibels are not linear. So it's not a graph like this. Decibels go like this. So to the human ear, a 157 shot versus a 129, a 157 is probably going to sound three times as loud to the human ear. And so that, yeah. So like that's why if you look at a suppressor, it does 132 versus 127, it's only 5 decibels. One's going to sound very pleasant to shoot at the human ear. One's going to be a 132 is what I would say is like quiet enough for hunting, but you wouldn't want to do a range day without hearing protection on or do a lot of shooting without hearing protection.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow.
It's actually probably because I know what suppressor you have, which I'm not going to name the name, but that suppressor probably on your PRC is probably a 132 can. That's a 127 can. And so that's only 5 decibels difference, but the sound difference to the human ear is probably dramatic. Yeah.
Even I was out shooting with my girlfriend before the mountain goat hunt. She was just like, she's seen me shoot the other one before. And
yeah.
This one's like, what's different? Like she just thought it was the same thing. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, no, it's totally a different
suppressor. Yeah.
Like way better.
Yeah.
A lot quieter. It does have a different sound to it.
Yeah, people have asked, like, it makes a whooshing noise, and that's part of the tech that's in it. But it doesn't make a typical, like, I've shot other suppressors that sound really thumpy, and then some that sound cracky. The titanium kind of makes it tingy, and it's kind of in between. It's kind of a whoosh noise is the only way I can describe it. So, yeah, different tone.
Gosh. You think there'll ever be, obviously, new materials change all the time, but, like, is there another optimal material out there that you could use, but it might be like way too expensive or something you're like looking at down the road? Or just like, yeah, you just don't know until we develop some more technologies for what these could be.
Not for hunting. Titanium is probably the best product out there. It has the highest strength to weight yield for its mass. I wouldn't think that there would be, like, I can't think of anything on the top of my head that I'm sure there's some space program out there that does have something that would be better. But then, yeah, so it's not as strong as steel, but it's half the weight of steel. So you're still getting, 70% of the strength, but something lighter. I don't know if they would, nothing that is currently 3D printed out there that I'm aware of would be an improvement on it. As far as for our purposes. Yeah.
Gosh. I want to talk about something too. I was curious about. I've obviously not at the rounds yet, but like, how do you actually clean the suppressor?
So you can do a couple different methods. There's a soaking method. There's some companies like Breakthrough that make one that's a chemical that you can put in there that basically breaks down the carbon.
So you just dunk it in there and soak it for
24 hours. Yeah, 24 hours. Then you just rinse it out. They have a soak. They have a pre-soak and a post-soak. There's two different soaks there, and that cleans it too. And then you can just rinse it out from there. What gets tricky is like rimfire cans that are 3D printed. You start getting into a lot more lead based with them because you have like a lot of subs are not jacketed rounds. So they do make chemicals for that, but you want to make sure you're much more careful with that just because of the chemical, like lead poisoning is a much bigger deal. Carbon's really not dangerous to you for the most part, but lead is. So that's kind of where you want to be more careful with that. You still will have some lead residue on the inside of like cans, but for the most part, the rimfire cans are more. You can also do an ultrasonic cleaner. So it just sends an ultrasonic sound wave through it and actually breaks up the carbon, kind of rattles it free. So you do that, which they make different methods for that. You can do a typical, like a normal, that's a quicker way to clean it. You can do like a 2-hour ultrasonic bath with a cleaner and that will clean it, or like a 24-hour soak. There's a new company in Idaho that is coming out with some new patented suppressor cleaning. I don't remember the name of it. It's Aegis or something like that. But I'm maybe trying some of that stuff here soon to see how well that stuff works. So,
is there a typical
like
round count?
Typically do it by weight. So once you get about an ounce heavier than what the suppressor is.
Taking it off and actually measuring it on scale.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can just measure it and see kind of where you're at. An ounce of carbon is quite a bit of carbon, so that's probably where I'd clean the suppressor at that point in time.
You said an ounce?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you posted that recently in your stories too.
Yeah.
I took a screenshot.
Yep, I had somebody ask about that.
In my head, I got a screenshot already. I took that screenshot for a reason. Huh. Wow. I swear I saw something on your website too that was talking about other new projects.
Mm-hmm.
Like different things you're going to do, like, because there's going to be a break on the end of it eventually, or like he's working on this for right now, or?
Yes. So I will be coming out with a braked suppressor at one point in time, and it's going to be primarily, actually it's going to be targeted at guys that like big magnums that want, and the goal is not to make it the quiet, putting a muzzle brake on a suppressor is not going to make it quiet. Mm-hmm. But if I can get, I mean, right now I'm at 130 decibels on a 20-inch 300 Win Mag, which is very good improvement. If I can get it up to like 137, which is uncomfortable to shoot, but it gives you enough suppression for somebody like you to go hunting with it, where you don't have to put plugs in and you know you're not going to cause permanent hearing damage, but you're still getting 90% of the recoil reduction of a break, that's kind of the goal with that. So, yeah, there's some things I'm working on with that that will be exciting that I'll share off camera with you, but yeah.
That's what I like what you were saying earlier about this whole thing. Like, you're not going to build a product unless you believe it's better than what's out there.
Yeah, I don't want to make a product that's just a product to sell.
If you're going to be doing this, and like, okay, when I can't remember what part of your website, I was on it last night when we were driving back, and I was like, oh, I didn't know you were doing that. I was like, okay. And now hearing you talk about like, yeah, you're not going to just release something to add a SKU. You don't need to add a SKU. You want to make something that's better than what's out there.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be done right.
Yeah.
I appreciate that part of it. So, huh. Anything else you're going to try to like do differently or change up? Mm-hmm. New things after you launch a 30 cal?
No, probably just continue to make improvements on what we have. I mean, I'll continue. The braked can is going to take a little while because it's going to be managing recoil reduction with sound reduction, and there's many ways of going about that methodology. So I'm going to try to – that's probably going to take more time than this because, like, the thing with the cans right now, people are like, okay, you've come out with four – the 30 will be four cans in the course of 6 months. Okay. They are evolutionary, and it's basically taking a formula and sizing it up and sizing it down and changing some things with that and trying to make improvements on the overall design of it. But it's not like going from that to a braked can where it is going to be it's going to be from the ground up completely new, which is going to take more R&D time and development to perfect that design. Yeah.
Watching four cans in less than 6 months. Do you ever sleep?
No. No, I think the term that my wife used is, I don't see the whites of your eyes very often.
She just builds suppressors.
Yeah, she actually brought up, it's funny because I've been, I'll work like all day and then I'll go, we have a gym in our shop like next to my, where we do the suppressor. So I'll go over to that gym and then I come home at like 9 o'clock at night. But she actually brought up, she's like, you know, there's an error in your company. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, there's no sound in space. I was like, there is on the planets you're hunting. So I had to look it up. There's a lot of planets out there with atmospheres, which means there should be sound on those planets. So there is, yeah.
Well, if there's no sound in space, you're basically making a suppressor right now that makes it this, like Earth here is like, you're taking all the sound out of it, making it more similar to space, then reducing the sound there. So when you go hunting somewhere else, Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. It's just like you're making it like space, limiting sound.
Yeah. The name comes from like the zero gravity thing for me was like kind of like you have a reduction in weight on other planets. So that's kind of also the little screws turning in the back of my head as far as like a name that was clever to the other thing that I have a problem with suppressors in the industry is that so many companies will just name a product, but you don't know what it is by looking at the product. Like it would be like calling the like your atmosphere jacket, but not putting jacket at the end of it. And you just go, and there's no photos. And you're like, well, or it just looks like everything else. And you don't know, is it a shirt? Is it a jacket? And suppressor companies will do that where they'll just call something a name. So then you'll have to click on the website and then you'll have to read through the description to actually figure out what the suppressor, because suppressor from the outside all look the same. And the zero gravity was supposed to talk about, I mean, it's supposed to imply the reduction in weight, but then I also always have the model as far as 6, 5, 7, 30 at the end of it. So people know that it's easy to find. Yeah.
It's so funny you bring up naming. So we've gone through this a lot with naming our Go Hunt products. Like you look at all these other, you know, puffy jackets, pants, boots, bows, rifles. They're always just the craziest name ever. And I don't know who sits there and decides like, okay, what's the new bow model going to be named? So let's just find the weirdest thing in the dictionary and that's what we're going to name it.
Yeah.
But that's why we've kind of switched things over. I think we're going to continue this going forward is like our pants are just like the Go Hunt lightweight hunting pant.
Yeah.
The Go Hunt, whatever.
Yeah.
And whatever like weird name you want to name for it. Like it's straightforward. You know what you're going to get when you click on it. And then when we launch Midweight one, the Go Hunt Midweight hunting pant.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know why more companies don't just make things, dumb it down again. Let's take things back. I understand you're being really creative.
Yeah.
Like, but no one knows what that jacket is when you say it's whatever name.
Yeah.
You don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But I know if I say, oh yeah, this is the Go Hunt lightweight puffy. We come up with our puffy jacket. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's going to be a lightweight puffy jacket. And we have a Go Hunt, you know, maybe heavyweight puffy. It's going to be a little bit heavier, but it's going to be a lot warmer.
Yeah.
Straightforward naming.
Yeah.
I think it helps the customer too.
It does. Because people, I mean, when you're trying to figure out, especially if you're on your phone, like most people do their shopping on their phone at night. And so like when you're sitting there on a little 4 or 5 inch screen, and you're trying to figure out what the product is, but you don't know. Mm-hmm. It can be very, very tricky. I do wish companies, like, it's kind of like car manufacturers, I'm really into cars, like a BMW 320 used to mean it's the 3 series and used to mean the 20 meant it was a 2 liter. Like that's where the name, and then manufacturers just went away from that. And they're like, no, we're just going to call it the 330. Well, does that have a 3 liter engine? No, it's just what we're going to call it. Does it have any like, and then manufacturers like Mercedes and BMW and Audi used to do that where they were very good about like the name implied something so you could look at it and know what the engine was in it. And then they went away with that. And then just name it whatever they want. So then it's really confusing because now the 330, what used to be the 3 liter, is now the 4 cylinder. You know, so yeah. But it transposes into every industry when it comes to that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a guy like me, he used to be, to say, a little anti-suppressor that thought brakes were everything. Mm-hmm. Sell me on a suppressor right now. You have me right here. Sell me all the benefits that you see. An suppressor and why someone who's hunting should use a suppressor.
Hearing protection is number one. Yep. There are situations where you have that braked 300 rum and you're walking to the top of a ridge and you see a 200 inch buck 100 yards below you. You're not stopping to put plugs in before cracking one off if it's a situation like that. So there is a, like, you're always ready in that sense. With that suppressor, with most suppressors, they do reduce recoil. So if from versus bare muzzle, if you're going from bare muzzle to a suppressor, the only downside is weight and overall length. And if you can compromise or minimize those two aspects of a suppressor, it's an improvement on the platform, in my opinion. Like if you have a 20 inch 300 Win Mag and you have a 6 inch suppressor, okay, you're adding some length, but you're only adding, in the case of this, it's going to be like 7 ounces. So you're adding a little bit of weight, but you have less recoil and less sound, which in most cases are an improvement. For hunting, I really like how animals respond when they're shot at suppressed. I mean, they don't, if you woof the first shot, or let's say your wind hold is bad and there's wind in the canyon and the shot breaks, you know, 3 feet in front of the animal and you didn't know that or whatever, you get a second chance. braked guns, you don't always get you might get a second chance, but the odds are the animal's going to be very aware of where the shot came from. Suppressors, they notice it. Like, I'm not saying the animal doesn't notice it, but they don't really know where the sound came from. They're just kind of confused. So it does give you, from a hunting aspect, that's kind of funny, because you talk about like big calibers, like you want that margin of error. And for me, to a certain degree, a suppressor is that margin of error when it comes to if you dial your scope wrong, you get a bad range or something. It does give you a margin of error to go back and correct an issue that you might have had. Also, in the case of like elk hunting this fall with my buddy Brian, like we were in the woods and we stop, and there's some, like, he was just trying to fill a tag, and there was a spike up there with a bunch of cows. So we waited for him like for a few minutes, and he cracked off a shot. The spike was just coming past a tree and stopped, and he was trying to, because his front shoulders were in front of the tree, so he was trying to like lead it back. Well, he hit the tree with that bullet, but just grazed it, and it makes this whack. The elk didn't know what was going on, but all they heard was the bullet crack the tree. They actually didn't really hear the gunshot, and they ran 20 yards, stopped, and didn't know what it was. We waited 5 more minutes. The spike walked out, and he ended up shooting the spike.
And they probably thought it was more of a natural sound, like a tree falling over, a branch breaking.
Yeah, yeah. So that's like a situation, but for me, it's just sound suppression. You're more friendly at the range. There's a social aspect of suppressors that are,
you know, my friends would always be like, you're that guy.
Yeah.
It's that guy who just goes there, and then everyone else is like trying to enjoy their Sunday morning, and you just wake up the whole range.
Yeah.
Not shooting suppressed.
Especially if it's covered range. Like if you're out in the Ole Miss, they're the worst. Like there's no getting around that. I do think that long term there's going to be studies done on breaks that it depends, and you don't shoot, like you shoot a few rounds and take a break, but the guys that are doing competitions and stuff like that, there's going to be some minor CTE, I think, from that constant concussion hitting them. That's going to it's not proven now, but I think it's gonna be a long future thing. I do think with suppressors too, you do anticipate the shot less than with a break, from like my personal experience. And I'm not saying it makes you more accurate, but I would say it gives you one more tool in your toolbox to maybe potentially have a slight more accurate shot. Now, shot acquisition is harder, so that's where you have to, like, getting back into the scope and something like that, you have compromises there. You're going to have more recoil, but I do think that you, in my experience, you anticipate the shot less when you know it's not going to be as loud.
You know, I bet too, obviously I don't have proof of this, but just hearing other people, you know, taking their kids out shooting, I think a suppressed rifle is going to make someone a better shot right away, rather than taking a braked rifle, because then you just, like, you're going to anticipate that recoil, you're going to hear that loud cracking, start to be afraid of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're starting off suppressed right away and you never had a braked rifle,
yeah,
and that's all you know, like, you're not going to develop bad habits, you're not going to flinch, you're not going to worry about, like, okay, that crack's going to be super loud. Even with ear protection, you're still going to kind of hear it.
Yeah.
It's going to send a shock through your body, where suppressed, you're like, okay, I can do this all day.
Mm-hmm.
You develop really good habits at a younger age, or you just take anyone, like, I don't know, your wife out hunting, or a family friend who's never really shot and they want to go shoot the range. It's like,
yeah,
suppressed is going to make them a better shot.
Yeah.
And not be scared of the rifle.
Yeah.
Because I remember back in the day, like, whew, shooting my 300 Win Mag, and I was like 10 years old.
Oh yeah.
Kind of like, okay, I'm gonna go do this. He's like, that's all that dad wants us to shoot with. He's like, yeah, this bleeds 30 cals are king.
So yeah,
that's what we shot with, and it wasn't a fun experience, but we still did it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we worked up slightly, but, like, yeah, we were throwing the weeds right away, and those weren't braked, they weren't suppressed or anything. And
yeah,
it's kind of like a nervous thing, like, okay, I'm gonna go up there and get bruised today. And
yeah,
that's what you gotta do.
And you can push back to that to a certain degree when you have an animal in front of you. It isn't always in the forefront of your mind, but if it's like, let's say, something that you're kind of on the fence about and you need to take a shot, like if you're somebody like, oh, okay, I guess I'll shoot that 3-point, and you are younger or something like that, and then you crack off that shot, you are thinking about the recoil of that, or the sound of that rifle, before you touch it off.
Yeah, I used to shoot with a life jacket.
Yeah,
back in the day, like, no joke, when I was 10 years old shooting 300 Win Mag, like,
yeah,
life jacket on, because it was like, it was just rocking my whole body.
Yeah.
As a way to make me be able to shoot longer. The one thing he did, the benefit that I fully saw this year, this is the first year, obviously, I've never hunted with a suppressor before until I just went to New Zealand, shot a tar suppressed, and then I shot that mountain goat suppressed. And I never really thought of this before, but this is a big benefit. So I was hunting, obviously, with Trail and Omar.
Mm-hmm.
They're both bow hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to deal with bringing a suppressor into New Zealand, because I didn't know the whole paperwork and trying to get it, make sure it got back legally. I just didn't want to, like, bring it, not really deal with anything, and see if I can get it back.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about that, especially since I was flying out of California.
Yes.
So I elected to not do it, but my buddy Cam over there, he had a suppressed 6.5 Creed.
Mm-hmm.
So first day we get all the way, actually we get all the way in there, you know, it was like 3 days of hiking. So we went like 19 miles in, stupid, would not recommend it, but it was fun to do. But now I did it. I was like, yeah, I'll fly in next time. We had a 2 day weather window and we were like, okay, here's a group of tar. I brought my rifle all the way over. I've been trying to get it in that country for 6 months, dealing with New Zealand police, like making sure the paperwork's dialed, going through all the required steps, got it approved literally like 24 hours before I got there. So I badly wanted to kill with my rifle.
Yeah.
But I couldn't take any of my suppressors because I didn't want to deal with that. But Cam then is like, you're going to use my rifle. And I was like, I did all the steps. I carried this stupid rifle all the way in here. He's like, but no, you're going to use my rifle because it's suppressed. Because here's the thing. There's a lot of tar here. Trail and Omar bow hunting. So these tar, we can go in there right now and kill them. They're not in a great spot for a bow. But if you use suppress, you're not going to blow up the whole canyon. And that trail and Omar, then we'll still be able to hunt that day. And tomorrow, these tar won't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Suppress can be a lot quieter than a big, nasty break. And the breaks I use are nasty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Effective.
And so that was something that I never really thought of before. It's like, okay, you're hunting with buddies, and you know, even your spring bear hunting, you know, there's multiple bears sometimes in one.
Yeah.
And if you shoot something with the break, you're probably gonna alert the whole area that, hey, there's mm-hmm. deer, or like something, you know, something's up. But like that suppressed, like, yeah, I took my shot, killed mine, and then the other tar were just running around like nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then our camera guy actually shot one as well.
Yeah.
And like, we should kill two right there. The next day, no joke, there was tar all over that same mountain.
Yeah.
After we'd made all that noise getting in there, like they're still in the same area, and they actually put a stock on one of their bows right there. But who's to know, like, if we took a break, muzzle break, and shot right there, would have we blown them out? Because it's a tiny little area.
Yeah.
But just that like extra precaution per se, I was like, okay,
mm-hmm.
pretty cool benefit. Not
yeah.
for your hunting buddies, because you want them to be successful too.
Yeah.
It just made sense.
There's something too about hiking that far into country, which for me, just on a personal note, I like being like, I love hunting solo too, like going deep into the country and like doing that. And when you are back there and you crack off around, it is kind of like, in the back of my mind, at least, I'm kind of like, okay, it's still kind of quiet back here, if that makes sense. Like there's something about like the tranquility of being back there and then taking an animal.
Just listen to the wind, listen to the birds, and all of a sudden you just crack off around.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and everything shuts up in the canyon. And there is something for me that I'm like, okay, I'm like, not that you're stewarding the sound, but you are like, it changes the experience slightly, like is what I would say. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the whole like setting up and shooting quickly thing too. It's like, oh, that's why my girlfriend always says, like, you're getting deaf. Bad experiences with breaks. Like,
yeah.
I remember one year I was hunting and had this buck in this burn. And wasn't anticipating him to walk down as quick as he did, but he walked down as quick as he did and got into my effective range. Like, okay, I'm gonna take this buck right now. I don't want him to get down more. The burn timber is gonna get thicker. Jump down, lay down my gun. And of course, I had my earbuds around my neck, did not like put them around my ears. And my break was right next to a giant burn tree.
Oh.
And so all that sound echoed off that even louder and
came yeah.
back. And like my left side, I was like, it was painful.
Yeah.
Like, pain, and I didn't like that. And yeah. I'm like in grizzly country too, so I'm like, okay, now I'm going to be like processing this deer in the dark and not be able to hear if there's a grizzly coming up behind me or anything like that. And I was like, yeah, that's probably not smart.
Yeah,
because like there's so many times you're like, yeah, I'm going to be careful, I'm going to have your protection, but like you get out there and like shit happens.
Yeah,
you forget to put earbuds in.
Yeah, it's always I'll do it this time, like, yeah. And then situations happen where you're even if you have time when you're setting up for a shot, and then you're like, oh, it's going to go into the timber, like that type of situation. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And even when I go to the range too, like if I'm shooting suppressed or not shooting, not suppressed on my break, my 300 ROM, like I double up on your protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause that thing is just gross.
Yeah.
It really is. Man. Yeah. Suppressors are pretty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got to try one. I'm glad that you enjoyed it and actually had like a good experience with it.
Phenomenal experience. Yeah. And like, if you can convince me.
I'm not going to lie. When I reached out to you and said, hey, I pay attention to a lot of details. I'm not the best about paperwork, but I do like notice details a lot, whether it's people or like when I'm designing stuff. And you like just briefly mentioned on one of the podcasts, like, yeah, I'm gonna take a 6.5 PRC on that goat hunt. And then that's when I reached out to you and was like, hey, you said you're trying to go lighter weight with this build. Like, I do have the perfect, it's like what I call the backcountry suppressor. Like, it's 5.7 ounces. Like, it's the one that would be perfect. And I'm glad that you took me up on it. And I'm also glad that you enjoyed using it, because that's yeah. Yeah.
To do it twice in 1 year, to have years on my mountain goat hunt, like, and now when I go out there and shoot my training rifles, I have a 6.5 Creed, I have a couple 6.5 PRCs.
Yeah.
It just makes it so I can shoot more. I do shoot more now, fresh, because it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to go out there. It's fun to get more rounds down. And like, even the hunting situation too, like, I see a lot of good benefits from it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm a hard guy to convince on things. Like, I'm very hard headed. Like, I don't follow any of this like small caliber stuff that
but
all the time for hunting stuff. I'm like, lights are going out. Nice. I'm like, yeah, 30 caliber King. I've always been a break guy.
Yeah.
But you're making me lean a little bit.
Yeah.
Playing around with it.
If I can convince Brady Miller to use a suppressor, then I feel like I've won. That's it's a feather in my cap, as they say.
I feel like slightly it broke the internet too, because the amount of DMs I got, like, what are you doing? Like,
Yeah.
I thought I'd see you doing this. And I got a buddy, Cody. He's definitely listening to this podcast. And he's like, I told you would come around someday. I know he's saying that right now when he listens to us, because he knows I've always been the opposite side of the spectrum. So
I will say, having the right one too, because like, if you had taken a 12 ounce can that wasn't really that quiet and was fairly like cumbersome, your perspective probably would have been different on the use case in that situation too. Yeah
And that's a good point, because I just had a buddy come down here the other day, and he was talking about your company, and he's like, my suppressor's like 14 ounces.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
like, really?
Yeah,
imagine like barrel harmonics and what's that's going to change to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Can't imagine putting 14 ounces on the front of my rifle.
Yeah, your barrel. Yeah.
And he said he had a lightweight mountain rifle too, so like, yeah, it's like a quarter of the weight here is like almost in the, not really, but like, you know, a ton of the weight is on the end of the barrel for that lightweight hunting setup.
Yeah. And that kind of leads into like one thing that, like, with that design and why I'm kind of caliber specific on a lot of stuff, I always find it like, for me, from the outside looking in, like building rifles and loving shooting in general, that people will spend, you know, $8,000 building out this custom rifle, and then they just go buy an over-the-counter heavy suppressor and throw it on there. And for me, it's like, you spent so much time picking out like the scope that was durable but lightweight, and the rifle that was well-built that would shoot accurately but like was exactly what you wanted, and then you just kind of go buy a product that's, to a certain degree, like a 30 cal suppressor, just kind of generic. Like, you just bought that one because it was there, and it wasn't tailored. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't really research it. It was just kind of what was available, and
yeah.
Didn't make anything better, and it's heavy.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, now I got to throw it on there, and I'm already a tall guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a good 26-inch barrel.
Yeah.
And so now I throw a really long suppressor on the top of that. Still, I'm like, okay, now I'm hitting.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I can have a little smaller package here, and quieter too.
Yeah.
Huh. You get my wheels spinning right now of all the cool things I could have done back in the day. But I had a suppressed rifle. Thinking back some of the times I missed some animals. Yeah. Pretty awesome. All made in the US too, right?
Yep.
All made in Idaho, start to finish.
Yep. Probably made in the USA.
Just crazy. You've been at this for 6 months, and here you are already. I want to say dominating the hunting market.
We're not dominating. There's many companies that have never even heard of us. So
that's good. They're going to sneak right in.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Competition is good and everything.
Mm-hmm. It is. Competition is what drives. It's funny. Somebody asked me the other day. They're like, do you think that these new, like, because there's so many companies coming out, specifically with the tax stamp going down to $0, like everybody's getting into the suppressor game. Do you think competition's like, are you worried about becoming irrelevant? And I was like, no, like, competition is what drives the needle forward. I was like, if Ford and Chevy didn't exist, we would still be driving 1980 Rams. Like, they just like would have just certain gotten to a certain point and been like, okay, it's good enough. Like, there's no competition out there. But the fact that you have these three companies that are constantly competing for horsepower, performance, and quality, like, that pushes the market forward. So yeah.
And it's so cool now too, because I think that was one of my also gripes about suppressors back in the day was how long they took to get.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the added pay, $200 tax stamp, which that's now wiped off. But it was like every year I was like, gosh, I have to wait like a year, maybe 8 months to get a suppressor. And then I was like, okay, now it's a year, 8 months go by. I'm like, shit, I could have already had a suppressor if I'd have
yeah.
then. you know, it's just like, it's basically almost instantaneous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think wait times have gone up a little bit, but it's like, yeah, you don't have the $200 tax. It's kind of a rub if you go spend, like, especially before, like $1,300 on a suppressor and then $200 on a tax stamp, and then you have to wait 9 months, and then you aren't necessarily loving the product when you finally get it. Like, that's a hard, and you can't sell it either. It's not like a rifle where you can go down to the local place and like trade it in. Like, you can technically sell a suppressor, but it is a much harder to do than other stuff. So it's a commitment to something that, it's a bit of a rub when it comes to that, but. Yeah, but
get a lot easier nowadays. I can't wait to see what you can come out with next.
Yeah,
a little 30 cal. I blew my mind when you sent me that video yesterday.
The recoil reduction was I have a recoil sled that I can do.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I can do rough numbers. It's not the most accurate, but it gives me kind of a rough estimate as far as recoil reduction. I'm interested to do it on that rum, because that rum was just a normal Remington, 24-inch barrel factory rifle. Threw the suppressor on there, and it was not unpleasant to shoot. I thought it was going to be, and we were just shooting, it's like tier three, I think, is like the, like, you know, the Remington factory ammo, where it's like the, you know, tier three is like the hot stuff, and we were shooting that, but it was not unpleasant. So I'm interested to see versus bare muzzle with the suppressor, specifically on something with that large of a powder charge, what the variance is there in recoil. But yeah,
what's the lead time on your suppressor
right now? About 3 months. Yeah. Yeah, so we're actually here at SHOT Show looking at printers, trying to bring production up and bring more of it in-house. We do sub out our printing right now, and he can print us a lot of suppressors, so it's not like we're not putting out a lot of suppressors. It's just bringing that in-house and having more control over that process and then continue to build on that. That's what we're trying to do right now. It's funny because people are like, could you, like, there's a lot of companies out there that you can just contact and have them print your suppressors. Like, yes, I could do that, but the problem is I don't want to compromise any amount of quality when it comes to that. And the guy that I have do it, I know, like, he prints at 60 microns, which I like. He uses the highest quality titanium that comes out of Canada. Like, there's a lot of things, and I don't want to, it take a lot of time and effort to outsource that to another company to improve or build up on production, and then have a worry about quality, which I'm not willing to compromise. So
Yeah. Never sacrifice quality.
Yeah.
Seems like everything nowadays is getting like, just like chasing numbers, chasing dollars, trying to make things as cheap as you can, but saying it's quality. And it's like, if it's not quality, I just don't want to deal with it anymore. I'm willing to pay more of a higher price, but just keep quality things out there.
Yeah.
Everything you look at in this world right now is just, it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. It's not as good as it was 20 years ago. Like, I hate this.
Yeah.
It just drives me bonkers.
Everything costs more and everything costs less to make, but it's,
they come out with a new model this year and they say it's like better, but it's like, no, you just put a cheaper part on there.
Yeah.
Or some of these rifle companies I see, and you say it's more like advanced and crazy because you can do different things. But I'm like, no, it's, it looks cheaper because of how it's built, but you're charging me more for it. What's going on here?
Yeah. Companies in today's society, I would say, spend way more money on marketing and not enough time on development, or not enough money on development. Like, for me, like, how when I view a company, marketing will sell a product for a certain amount of time. Reputation carries you forever. And so when you have a company that has a reputation, there's many of them out there. Like, Thunderbeast has a great reputation. They've been making very high quality suppressors. Like, you don't really hear about a bad Thunderbeast. I think there's newer technologies that are better, but as far as a a brand reputation, like, that carries, like, they don't advertise, they don't have to, because they're just known in the industry for making a high quality product. And I do think that that's going to be hopefully something in the future, that more and more companies, as they come out with products, the products themselves, putting the money into the higher quality products and having that reputation carries them more than marketing. Because you can produce a product for, $5 and sell it for $100 and then spend 50 of that dollars back on marketing to sell more of that product. But the consumer is the only one getting, that's paying for the marketing. It's not the company to a certain degree. So I think that should be, that's kind of, we don't do a lot of marketing. I mean, I've put them in hands of people that I would hope that would enjoy them, like you and stuff like that. But I haven't, like, we don't pay for marketing or send them out to people that are like, and no paid influencers or anything like that, because we just want a product that, I want a product that people just want to use. And that's kind of the,
Especially in this day and age, my gosh, most stuff you're shoved down your throat constantly from people that are like, I don't know why this person's trying to sell me this right now. What are you doing?
Yeah.
In the world of AI too, it's just like, ugh, gross.
and a lot of people make a product just because they want to make a product to sell. There's no like conviction behind it as far as like, can I improve something here? It's just, we're going to make this product as another, like I see other companies making these products and we're just going to make something that's like identical, if that makes sense. Like it's nice to see, competition push things forward.
Thinking outside the box and doing something cool and like making it lighter, smaller, quieter, built for hunters.
Mm-hmm. Built for hunters by hunters. That's kind of I know that's a tagline that a lot of companies use, and I'm trying to come up with one more original, but like it's meant for backcountry hunting. That's the intent of that product. If you want something that's meant for your AR or something like that, that's not it. This is for the people that are, I think on our Instagram page, there's something like built for the dedicated or something like that. And that's kind of a line that I like.
You can think of some more like space taglines. Like,
I know.
Built in space for Earth. Make any sense.
I did have light on ounces, heavy on performance, which I thought was actually a fun tagline that I came up with, which I thought was a
good one.
Yeah. Huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that one actually.
It's not necessarily spacey, but I thought it was a good line. So yeah.
Normally my best ideas come at like mile 6 or 7 when I'm running.
Yeah.
It's like always I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. I try to like run and try to like voice a note, like my idea down really quickly. Cause I'm like, I don't know why, but
yeah.
Somewhere around that range is when like the best ideas in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I start thinking when I'm listening to like a podcast while I'm running, I'm like, ooh, yes.
Yeah.
Do that when I get back to the office.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just like getting out and chasing other ideas. Maybe I'll come up with some other crazy way to make it even quieter.
We're working on it. Never stops.
Never stop.
Nope.
Appreciate you coming here.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
How can everyone learn more about you? Website, Instagram.
Airlockindustries.com. We have an Instagram page, Airlock Industries LLC. You have to type in Airlock Industries LLC because of Instagram. If you type in Airlock Industries, yeah, you're not going to find it. Yeah.
I think it's a badge of honor.
It is kind of a badge of honor. Yeah. And then we have a Facebook page, Airlock Industries. So those are like the three main ways to get a hold of us. We don't have Twitter or X or anything like that. More information on the website, on our products. And then we have, we've been doing kind of with production. Once we know how many suppressors we have allocated, we've been doing drops because that for us makes it where we're not overselling an allocation. So that's what we've been doing. We'll have one coming up in February. That will probably ship. February will ship probably in May, April, May is kind of the timeline on that. If we can get a printer in house sooner, then we're hoping to push all those timelines back, fulfill orders quicker, and get more stuff out.
Bring bear hunters out there happy with some suppressed.
Yes. Yeah. I've had a lot of people message me, hey man, am I going to get this for spring bear? Cause people have been asking very specifically that question. Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
They're remarkable.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, you convinced me of the benefits and I saw it and, yeah, appreciate you trying to open my eyes a little bit. Definitely need that every now and then because I'm stuck in my way. So it was a good brush of fresh air in a sense. And I'm excited to keep shooting them, playing around,
yeah,
taking them on hunts. And like, that's the thing. When they work, it's something I like.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely works and performs. So you did a lot of things right.
Yeah. I think for me too, one of the most rewarding things is like, producing a product people love is very cool, but also seeing it, like when you send me the photo of on the mountain go hunt, and like, yeah. I have customers sending me photos of like wolves and like other hunts they're on. Mm-hmm. And XO, like the guys there, they run my suppressors and they just did a hunt in Sitka, Alaska for some blacktail, and seeing your product being used in places that you want to be, like that for me, it's very cool. I mean, you guys do it with like your gear and stuff like that. When you see people,
the DMs we get to, like, oh, I picked up the tag for the first time and went out, got an animal. Like those are the coolest moments.
Yeah.
All the late nights, all the long hours, like application season, just like, it's a drain.
Mm-hmm.
Work involved, but like, then you get the success later on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was worth it.
Yeah.
That's the coolest thing. Yeah. I got to go hunt some more places where suppressors are legal. I'm going to California here.
Yeah.
Now that I have it and I want to use it again.
Yeah.
Put my brake back on.
I know. Well, that's like for me too. I've been looking at like different places and like specifically places I can go and hunt with suppressors. And it's actually kind of in the States, it's easier, but like going out of country, certain countries and stuff like that, like New Zealand's actually pretty easy because they're basically over the counter there. But yeah, it's kind of like, yeah. Canada, can't go to Canada with a suppressor, which sucks.
Yeah, I'm going to Australia to go hunting here this spring. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to deal with that because I'm not going to take a rifle anyway. But I was like,
yeah,
we'd love to have it there.
Yeah.
Actually, a couple of these hunts, I'm like, yes, it's meaningful to have it on this hunt. I want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't.
Yeah.
Hopefully that changes.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yep.
Whenever it gets on board some of these other states. But there's only like 6 or 7 states you can't use one.
Yeah, there's eight. Well, eight you can't use them for hunting, and I think it's eight you can't use for hunting, and maybe six so they're not allowed. Hawaii, California,
New York, I think.
New York, Illinois. I'd have to look them all up, but yeah.
Okay. Thanks again for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having. Appreciate it. Wow, went past an hour.
Yeah, we can do like 45 minutes, and here we are just blabbing more. I could keep going too.
Yeah.
I got more questions off camera.
Yeah, sounds
good. I want to talk about some other stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, but it's going to have to be off camera.
Yeah, it'll be coming out soon. We'll release stuff.
All right. Appreciate you again.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.